So we're starting on chapter 6 today, and we're going to get as far as we can, and anything we don't get done today, you're just going to have to read on your own. Chapter 6 is ministry with and by young adults. And this is, I think, a really important piece. He's writing about his experience as an actual young adult, as not, we sometimes use the phrase young adult to refer to teenagers, and that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about actual adults who are young.
20s and
30s. 20s and 30s. So that's what the chapter's talking about, but I want to back up a little bit and talk about Christian formation generally, which is everything from Christian education for little children all the way through to what we're doing today, which is forming us to be better Christians a little bit at a time. And so we use the word formation rather than education because it's not just about what you know in your head. It's also about practices and how you live your life. And so formation in terms of being formed as a Christian rather than as an intellectual exercise, right? Obviously, education is a piece of it, but it's not all of it. And I'm conscious when I use the word formation, word first started being used, one of the congregations I was working with was near a military base. And one of them said, every time I hear formation, I hear being forced to stand in line and all move the same way. I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's not that kind of formation. but one of the things that I mentioned when we talked about evangelism is the Episcopal Church does a really good job of recruiting young adults into the faith. And we did a better job of that when we funded campus ministry more. But if you look at Episcopalians, about half of the people who are active in the Episcopal Church now joined from other denominations as an adult of some stripe. What we don't do as good a job at is keeping our children. Only about between a quarter and a third of children who grow up in the Episcopal Church continue to be Episcopalians.
Do they change denominations or just stop going to church?
Some of them change denominations and some of them stop going to church.
Okay.
Has there ever been a study on people who have come back?
There are not that many who have come back. Who go somewhere else and come back. That's the myth we tell ourselves is, oh, well, the kids stop going to church when they go to college and they'll come back when they have their own children. But it doesn't really seem to happen that way much. Some, but not much.
I had to work my way through college. Mm-hmm. And I was a clinical lab technician. And so I went to church at the Catholic hospital, and once I didn't have to work every Sunday, then I came back. But it was, my heart was in the Episcopal Church, but it in the Episcopal hospital.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are some of those, you know, some of that group. But, and this is not in the chapter, but this is just my add-on. If you look at worship attendance patterns, right? For people who are in what's called the greatest generation, that is the generation before the baby boomer, about 85% of those people attended Christian worship once a month or more. Now, my stats on this, I haven't updated them in a little while, but that was about 85% of them attended Christian worship once a month or more. When you move to the baby boomer generation, Pew, who is the group that does these studies, had to expand the question they asked to not just Christian worship, but any house of worship. So including Jewish synagogues, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu. When you look at baby boomers, 60% of them attend a house of worship once a month or more. So you go from 85 to 60, and you expand to include not just Christian churches, right? You go down to Gen X, which is my generation, people who are in their 30s to 50s right now. 10% of us attend any house of worship once a month or more. And then you go down to the millennials, and they don't really look at children that much because children go if their parents go. But if the people in their 30s to 50s, only 10% of them are going, those are the people who have children.
Right? It is.
So, but if you look at the millennials who are adults, it goes down to 5%. So if you look at the progression of worship attendance in...
What were the percentages again?
85, 60, 10, and 5.
That's huge.
Okay.
Is this U.S.?
This is U.S., yeah. It's different, a different story in different parts of the world, but this is U.S. So, that's... And the studies also have shown that it's not just the Episcopal Church that kids are leaving. It's a huge thing in the evangelical community, that children who were raised in the evangelical community are leaving the church in droves as they get to be adults.
Well, they don't have to do it.
Well, they don't have to do it. So that's why this chapter is really important, because he's talking about how do we get to those 20-year-olds who are, you know, just beginning to be independent and set up the patterns for their life. For most of them, church isn't even on their radar screen. You know, it's just, well, why would I think about that? Because only 10% of, you know, their parents went to church, so it wasn't a big deal. Now, in Buffalo, that statistic is a little bit skewed because this area is very culturally Catholic, even though the largest religious group in the Buffalo metro is Catholics who do not attend church. The second largest group is Catholics who do attend church.
There you go.
Okay?
What's after that?
Jews of all varieties, and then Protestants. Evangelical Protestants, and then mainline Protestants. Because they split those out. If you put all the Protestants together, we would jump up over the Jewish community. But not enough. But because of those numbers, we are very culturally Catholic. So even people who don't go to church want to have their babies baptized, maybe want to have their marriages in the church, although that's becoming less of a thing. Certainly want to have their funerals in the church. You know, the rites of passage, and maybe go to get their Easter baskets blessed. Or go to Christmas Eve Mass, those kinds of things. So the numbers are a little bit skewed for us. We have a little bit higher worship attendance than maybe some other parts of the country, if only because if you want to have your child baptized in the Catholic Church, they have rules.
Yeah,
so, I mean, a lot of the baptisms we do are people who want to have their children baptized but can't seem to get over the hurdles. So anyway, when we talk about young adults, this is really the group, and this is really the second generation where this is true, that the phrase "they like Jesus but not the church" really applies. Studies of young adults have been going on. As I said, this is the second generation. It started with Gen Xers, and it's now moved into the millennials, and it's finding kind of the same thing. They're very interested in the life and the ministry of Jesus. they think he's very interesting, that his teachings are kind of right where they want to be. And they're particularly interested in ancient spiritual practices, not old spiritual practices, not 1950s spiritual practices, but ancient ones, ones that have connections back in the way back. But when you ask them what they think about Christians, so they're interested in Jesus and they're interested in Christian practices that go back. But if you ask them what they think about Christians, the same words come up. Misogynistic, homophobic, judgmental, and seeking to impose their values on others. And if you think about how Christians who speak in public about their faith tend to do that and how they tend to be portrayed doing that, it's kind of easy to understand, right, how they got those ideas. If you Google, you know, Christian social issues, you'll get a lot of anti-abortion, a lot of anti-gay marriage, you know, a lot of those kinds of things. And so it's really easy to see how they got, you know, misogynistic, homophobic, judgmental, out of what they see. And I have always said, and this is something that, Kellen says too, the author of the chapter, that we do a really good job in the Episcopal Church of hiding our light under a bushel, and this is really the group we should be aiming at, because we have ancient spiritual practices, we have the stories of Jesus, and we as a denomination are not misogynistic. We accept women in all orders of ministry and in all parts of the church. We're not homophobic. Largely, there are, you can find dioceses where that's not true, but largely as a denomination, we fall into the all sacraments for all people camp.
And even in any church, you've got people that right. are, you know, a standard mm-hmm. deviation on. Mm-hmm. But that's the beautiful thing of the Episcopal Church, is that, you know, mm-hmm. all are welcome. mm-hmm.
So you know, and we really don't really seek to impose our values on others that much, because if you talk to me about what does the Episcopal Church believe about, I'll tell you, well, you know, you can find Episcopalians who believe this, you can find Episcopalians who believe that, the limits are large. So this is we actually are what this group is looking for. We just don't do a very good job of meeting them where they are. You know, and even here, you know, we worship at 8 and 10 on Sunday morning. Well, that's great, unless you're working 3 jobs or retail or in the food service industry and can't come to church at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. You know, and we're trying to be more of a presence so that people can connect into things on the internet and those kinds of things. But one of the things he talks about is yearning for community. Mm-hmm. And while you can build community on the internet, it's harder than doing it in person. But he talks about yearning for tradition. And he talks about wanting to follow Jesus and yearning for what the world cannot give. So things you can't get from being a part of, you know, kind of groups that go bar hopping, or, you know, even you know, a volunteer group at the animal shelter. They want more than that. So he talks about that. I'm going to be quiet for a minute and let you all reflect. What do you think? What have you heard?
One of the things I know that Judy Brennan, she's also mm-hmm. a priest within the Episcopal Church, it was very important for her to meet people at the crossroads. Mm-hmm. And this may sound weird to some of you, mm-hmm. but she's tried it, and mm-hmm. it was always a goal of hers to meet people in bars mm-hmm. and talk about mm-hmm. Christ. Mm-hmm. And she happens to be a gay priest, so mm-hmm. A lot of persons who are LGBTQ have been, you know, fire and brimstone away from their religion. Mm-hmm. And so she would bring the love of Jesus into that kind of a situation, and she really did help to build community.
Mm-hmm. And where is she?
Where is she right yeah. now? She's retired priest, oh. so she does supply.
Where was she when she was doing this?
Kind of all over Buffalo.
St. John's Grace, yeah. but yeah, she's local in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And at the cathedral.
Yeah. Now, did she bring them to like her church, or?
Well, she let them know the church was there, mm-hmm. and people did come. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a gangbusters mm-hmm. like. And then they came in droves, yeah. but yeah. you know, it's like anything else. Mm-hmm. To be intentional about what you're doing mm-hmm. and to do it consistently is part of the key.
And to think about building community, maybe that it doesn't actually connect back to the Sunday morning worship. One of my friends is a priest in Portsmouth, Ohio. And Portsmouth, Ohio is a little town. I mean, it's
where
not,
is it?
It's on the Ohio River, right near West Virginia.
Okay.
And he does, they talk about theology on tap here. That's actually a copyrighted term. Yes. He does what's called pub theology. They have a downtown pub. And once a week, he sits at a table in the pub in Portsmouth, and anybody who wants to come comes, and they talk about spiritual things. And he gets about 40 people who come. And about half of them are members of his Episcopal church, and about half of them are people who just come to pub theology because they're interested in having a community that talks about spiritual things. They aren't really interested in becoming a part of the church, but this is their church. Mm-hmm. You know, they come and they talk about Jesus and they talk about what that means for their life. Mm-hmm. And they have a beer together or a soda, you know, because it's, you know, equally attractive alternative beverages. And they do that once a week.
What you just said hits mm-hmm. another point. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people can be spiritual, believe in a God, mm-hmm. But are not, do not like the concept of the church.
Right.
You know, that structure and mm-hmm. all its attributes.
So the getting outside your doors, because for a long time you've said, oh, well, you know, we're here, all are welcome if you come, but the next step is how do we go where they are, right? And meet them where they are in a way that isn't, you know, you're going to hell if you don't, you know. So.
So is the goal more to just, you know, spread the word of Jesus, mm-hmm. yes. or is it to bring people in?
It's more to spread the word of Jesus. And if you get some members from that,
it's like the frosting on the cake.
Yeah, that's a bonus. But for a lot of the folk that these kind of other places meet, Sunday morning is never going to work. But just the way that their life is.
You're saying they stay up too late Saturday night and they'll never get out of bed Sunday morning?
No, I'm saying they're working.
Oh, okay. Working too.
They're working. We live in a 24. Yeah, we live in a 24/7 world now. Sports between sports for kids and service jobs and a lot of people, particularly in the 20s and 30s, are working not one job but two or three. Mm-hmm. And the second job, you know, they're driving Ubers right now or you know, waiting tables or some of those things.
I think part of the problem too is people are so on the internet, the younger ones.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really socialize outside of their mm-hmm. own little computer area there. Mm-hmm. And their little friends that they have, mm-hmm. not little friends, but mm-hmm. a small group of friends. Mm-hmm.
But they do go to coffee shops, and they do go out on Saturday nights.
For the coffee shops? I don't really see that anymore.
Oh, I do. Yeah. Oh my gosh, yes. I used to work at Panera as a Gap job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And Spot Coffee, if you've ever gone in there, you know, just to meet someone for a cup of coffee, they're there.
They are.
They may be doing homework, but they're there.
They've got their half cup out there.
Yeah, they're going to be study groups.
But you do have to be on the web too. You can't just, you know, use.
That's true.
You know, and I do a lot of work with other congregations, and one of the things I say is, if you want to grow your church, if you want to move the conversation from evangelism to church growth, if you want to get people to come to church, about 90% of the people who join a congregation are invited by somebody who goes there. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, these are statistics that are across the United States, across denominations. Well, we're Episcopalians, so we tend to not invite people to church, but if you want, if you really want to be effective, the most effective way is to invite somebody to come to church. If you're not going to do that, of the remaining 10% of people who join a church, 99.8% of them find the church they join on the internet.
I did.
That's Yen. Yeah.
Good example.
So.
Not only the denomination, but the church.
Yes. They find the congregation and the denomination, if they're looking for denominations, on the internet.
Yeah.
So either invite people to church or have a really good web presence. And if you don't do either of those things, you're really not going to get anybody to join your church, because basically everybody who joins a church finds them. Even people who move to this area who are Episcopalians find the congregation they join on the internet. So if we want to talk about church growth, invite people to church and have a really good presence on the internet. And I work with a lot of congregations who don't even have a web page yet. And like, okay, well,
and if you have one, you have to keep it up.
Yeah, you do. Oh, it's, yeah. You know, you have to really project who you are into the web. One of the things Liz and I are doing this summer is revamping our web presence, because it's been the same for several years, and it's time to
is the
shake
overall
it up.
Structure given to you by the overall Episcopal?
No.
Because I noticed that some of the websites were similarly organized.
Right. The diocese,
like from the main web page, the home page.
Yeah. The diocese here in Western New York, we have a web hosting program for small congregations, and so the diocese pays the server fee and the web developer fee to set up their website, which is why a lot of them look similar, because it's the same web developer. And that we don't qualify, we're a little too big of a congregation to qualify for that here at St. Paul's, but for the smaller congregations, that's a service the diocese provides to help them get a web presence. And the person who runs that program for the diocese is Liz. So we have that asset in-house. So she and I are now, that's our summer project when things quiet down a little bit. You know, oh, look, let me fix that, and let's freshen this up and change this. And it's a lot of work, but you have to do it about every couple of years to keep your presence fresh. So that's kind of a piece of that. There's something else I was going to say. One of the things I've done, I haven't done it here in a while, is to challenge, maybe I'll do it in May, challenge everybody to, on staggering times, take a week off church. But don't stay home. Go out into the community at 8 or 10, whatever service you go to, and see where people are and who you run into that you know. Because every time I say, well, invite somebody to church, people say, well, everybody I know goes to church. And I think, and when people take the Sunday off and go where other people are at church time, you'd be surprised how many people you know who you'll run into at Wegmans, Home Depot, you know, Spot Coffees, Starbucks, breakfast, you know, places like that. So that's something that I may maybe challenge people to do over the summer is permission to miss church. not that you need it. So, was there anything else I wanted to say about this? What do you all think?
I remember at the cathedral when I was there, we had a 20s and 30s group, and the group worshiped together. They would sometimes take turns doing a coffee hour, but they would always do something special throughout the week or every couple of weeks. Like they would do a pub theology thing together. They would, on Ash Wednesday, they would meet at the church and they would have oatmeal together before 6 a.m. or something like that, and then they would have the Ash Wednesday service. This is before we did Ashes to Go. And then they would get together after dinner time and talk about what they noticed during the day. But it was, that group bonded together really strongly. And they did occasionally bring their friends in to see what it was like. But when we talk about building community, I mean, we all have friends of all ages in the parish, but there was something, I think we had a young professionals group here.
We did for a while, yeah. We had a 20s and 30s young professionals group. And then they all had children.
Oh, yeah, that happens.
So
sometimes you can, that can work to your advantage too.
But I do think one of the things the church provides is a chance to have intergenerational relationships, which is increasingly rare in our society, that there is a place where you can really be friends with people of lots of different ages. That's harder to find anymore. That's going to be all we have time for, because it's time for me to go and get ready for the next service. So I'm sorry, the rest of the book's going to have to be on your own.
This is the last meeting for this small plates group.
We'll do a very small plates in May. We're going to look at liturgical theology, the words of our worship and what they mean. And we'll do that the first two Sundays in May.
Reading a book or anything?
No book for that. I'll have a handout the first session of that.
So how do we prepare for this?
Just come.
It's too easy.
Yeah, just come for that. Do finish the book, because the other chapters are really good.
It is a good book.
Okay.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Back in